Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the match attending voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Match attending, indeed.
Well, I thought last time we didn't actually elaborate on this. So you mentioned that you flew to Qatar, you went to a game, you didn't say what game that was, or you didn't describe the experience that you had. Now, much has been said about this World Cup, of course. So talk us through it. Talk us through your experience and the game you went to.
Yeah, very true. I just spoke about the fact that I had no sleep in 4 days. But it was... Right, where do I start? How do I sum up Qatar or the day? So I went to the Wales-USA game. Reason being, I worked with a couple of the goalkeepers, one on the USA side, Sean Johnson, one on the Wales side, Adam Davis, although neither of them featured on the night, unfortunately. Although both goalkeepers played very well, must say, Wayne Hennessy and Matt Turner. So it was really... surreal. That's probably the word I'd use. So you land in Qatar, land in Doha. The airport was fantastic. Jumped in a taxi. And the thing that made it surreal was that the stadium that we went to for that particular game was like the furthest point away in Qatar, which was 20 minutes. You know, it's so small. You don't really appreciate maybe just how small it is. I know they keep saying it's smaller than Newcastle. It's nowhere near Newcastle from what I could see. And as you're driving, or as we were driving then to the stadium that was the furthest point away, I think en route I saw all six other stadiums, like either side of the road. It was really bizarre, and they look incredible. I do wonder, I suppose the only question mark I got with that is then what the legacy will be, what those seven, you know, humongous stadiums will be used for in time. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that. In terms of positives, yeah, I mean, the stadium that we watched the game in was incredible. I guess the atmosphere within, the show beforehand, etc., really, really impressive. I think there's certain details that they missed out on. So look, I know they obviously don't sell alcohol. I don't think they'd have been able to sell alcohol, truthfully, because, you know, for one stand, or the stand that I was in, there was only one concession stand in the whole of the side of the stadium. So at half time, I was starving. I hadn't eaten since I'd left from Dubai. I hadn't eaten for a long time. So I was like, I've got to get something, just a pack of crisps or something. So I went to get a pack of crisps and a non-alcoholic beer. And I left just before the end of the first half. I thought, oh, I'll be clever, beat the rush. It took me 30 minutes. I missed the first 10 minutes of the second half because it took that long queuing. They just hadn't sorted that side of things out, which I guess is then part of maybe not hosting an event like this before or not having regular football. You know, I think so. Details like that weren't great. I didn't tell you this. I had, what's the FIFA president called?
Gianni Infantino.
Yeah, he was in front of me. So when I was queuing up, really random. And like, he was actually getting quite a lot of like people wanting selfies with him and all sorts. It was a bit weird. But so when you queue up, you get to the stadium and you have to go through all sorts of security, but you're still about half a mile from the stadium. It's really bizarre. You kind of like queue up, you go through, they scan you, they do all sorts. All the tickets are all on your mobile. So even this, when you get to the stadium, the Bluetooth hooks up with your phone and then the ticket is then issued to you. So it's all very, very complicated. Luckily, I managed to figure it out. He was in front of me in the queue, which I found weird that he was queuing, but I guess everyone queues. So he kind of queued up and went through as well. And then once you get through, the stadium's still half a mile in the distance. So you've got quite a long walk from there to the stadium. There's nothing really going on because there's no bars. There's not a lot going on outside the stadium. You know, so it was just a bit different. And then I guess the atmosphere naturally, yeah, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but ordinarily, you know what it's like in England? You're walking up to a stadium and you've got people falling out of pubs and, you know, it's a bit raucous. It just felt, and maybe it was this particular game because, look, for instance, if I was going to maybe an England game, I'm sure that it might be a bit different and there would be a lot of England fans there, where it did feel like there was a good number of Wales fans, a good number of USA fans, but you could also tell there were a lot of people that were I guess, just go into a game. So the Wales end was really loud. USA have their chance as well. So it was okay, and the atmosphere is okay, but it was just different. I can't quite put my finger on it, but maybe it is the fact that you haven't got 80,000 drunken fans. It was, 50,000 sober people.
Okay, interesting. So a few things from that. I mean, firstly, can you imagine if they were selling alcohol with what you've just described there? It would have been carnage.
Oh, no
chance. Absolute carnage. Secondly, so Infantino, you being behind him would suggest that you had a couple of prawn sandwich tickets there.
No, that's what I mean. Regular. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. The tickets that I had was in with the Wales friends and family, because right. Adam Davis was kind enough to, I'll say kind enough, I do owe him some money actually for them. I probably shouldn't forget that. But he was kind enough to sort the tickets. So it was sat with all the Wales family. And it was only until about 5 minutes in, because obviously I've known Adam for a long time now, but I've never got to meet his family because his dad lives abroad and what have you. So I'm sort of sat looking around thinking there must be around here somewhere. And I had in front, there was like six people with Mepham shirts on. So I'm like, well, that's obviously Chris Mepham's family. Then there was another few people with more on the back. So I'm like, okay, I'm looking like around to see if anyone's got Davies on the back. And I couldn't see anyone. It was only then 5 minutes from the end, the guy sat next to me said something. And I was like, are you Adam's brother? and he was. And then it was a dad and Adam's partner and so on and so forth. So I actually got into a good conversation with them towards the end. But yeah, so it was quite nice. All the family sat around. So it was a bit different in that section because it was friends and family. So obviously not maybe quite as raucous as the to the right of me, like behind the goal, where it was all the Welsh fans. But no, Infantino, he queued like the rest of us.
Okay, you said the airport was incredible. What was incredible about the airport?
Oh, just lovely. Just lovely. Similar to Dubai, really, where, I don't know, I bearing in mind I'd then flown from Manchester Airport the day before, which, look, for our Manchester listeners, that's not a particularly pleasant airport. Probably similar to Luton. If I'm going to have like a ranking of airports, they're down there with my least favourites. But I don't know, you turn up in like the Emirates Airport in Dubai, or you turn up in Qatar, and it's just all brand new. It's lovely. It's spacious. It's so quick getting through, etc., etc. So it was just nice.
And just lastly, so you described the fact that all the stadiums are within close proximity of each other. I don't know how to feel about this one, because on one hand, there is the idea that you go to a tournament abroad, and part of that is soaking up the culture of an entire nation and traveling here, there and everywhere, and stadiums being miles apart. Yet on the other hand, there is something to be said as well for a World Cup hub, I guess, and everything being in the same area. A bit like if you were to talk about London 2012, of course, the Olympic Village was incredible, and that Olympic area was so atmospheric and had such a community feel to it that I suppose maybe this kind of has that in the same way.
Well, yeah, and I know there's examples of people that have done three games in a day, which is, quite a fun thing to do, I guess. So, but then I do come back to that point. I just wonder what happens after. They must have plans in place, I'm sure, but I'm kind of thinking, what other events do you host in Qatar now where you've got seven stadiums like that so close? Like the World Cup is makes sense, I guess, in that. But then I don't know what would be in it. Is it the Olympics? Is it, I really don't know what happens thereafter. Is it one where the Qatari league, and again, this is, excuse my ignorance, but I don't really know too much about the league in Qatar. Is it then that they do improve upon their league and suddenly these stadiums get used by the local clubs and it builds the football culture in both Qatar and, in fairness, the UAE in general? You've got Saudi obviously next door, and Dubai is a 45-minute flight. So I guess in that region, it might then form something thereafter. But the one that we went to, I think the capacity was about 50,000, but I think there are stadiums, I'm right in saying, that are 80,000, 90,000. So absolutely humongous, and they are, when you drive up to them, the fact they're all quite different, aesthetically very pleasing. I must say, actually, when I did go in, once you're inside, it's not quite so extravagant. Certainly the concourse was pretty basic, but as you're walking up to the stadium, once you're in the stadium themselves, even silly things like the seats, the seats are nice, you've got plenty of space, you're not cramped up, so they have done it well.
Yeah, and I guess those similar conversations were had after Brazil, weren't they? A debate that will be ongoing, no doubt. Right, we've got plenty coming up, of course. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
So we're actually going to start where we left off last time out. Now, if you remember, it was the last day of the first round of group games. So it was Group G and Group H. So Cameroon, Serbia, Brazil, Switzerland, South Korea, Ghana, Portugal, Uruguay. So what we're going to do is the same this time out, and we are recording on the final day of the second round of group games. So as we speak, Cameroon and Serbia have just kicked off. Hopefully nothing too extravagant will happen in that game. If it does, we'll cover it when we're next on air. But that final day of the first round of group games, where we last recorded, was relatively uneventful until Portugal and Ghana faced off. And Diogo Costa, with nearly the last kick or slip, I guess we could say, of the game, he was almost dispossessed by Iñaki Williams at 3-2 up. Thankfully, Williams did slip and all was okay. But it's mad, isn't it? I was thinking how in that podcast we just recorded, we'd referenced the Ben Killip incident in the Keeper Caper, and just a few hours later, the exact same thing very nearly happened.
Yeah, well, it's, and I think it's happened that often now. There's so many examples of this that you do get a lot of goalkeepers that do the exaggerated look over the shoulder. But I think that's now going to have to be a thing, you know, because you are seeing it so often, and strikers are quite cute with it, where they'll, you know, they realise that they just happen to be behind the goalkeeper for whatever reason, and they can kind of hide for a split second. There is the possibility of this happening. But it is a, I mean, it's a tricky one. I actually wrote in my notes, I wrote keys, wallet, phone. You know, you're leaving the house. Keys, wallet, phone. And it's just, I think it's going to have to be the same thing. If you're going to roll the ball out, which, yeah, I used to do all the time, and I know goalkeepers, when they haven't got pressure, you'd much rather hit the ball from the floor than a side volley, as much as many of them are fantastic at the side volley now. So it's just going to have to be that. And this is, ideally, you almost want to learn this lesson without having suffered from it first, you know, because so many goalkeepers have suffered. And even then, when you check, because it's going to be such a quick check, and if you imagine you're looking round and, right, the player might be there, but they may, it sounds ridiculous, but they may blend into the background, you know, especially if they're wearing, obviously, the shirt and the people behind are wearing the shirt. You're not necessarily going to see them. So it does need to be an exaggerated look, and you need to make sure. And I do think now it's going to just have to be a thing for every goalkeeper, because, look, it can't be an excuse anymore, really. Like, the first couple of times it happens, it's a bit unique, but the fact that it's happened so many times now over the last few years, it's going to be one where goalkeepers look, and he would have got blamed, of course, if that ball ends up in the net. You know, I already heard Roy Keane's comments, and I'm sure that he would have got a lot of even more stick had it have ended up in the net. And thankfully for his for him, his defenders were alert, and they were able to come back and clear the ball. But yeah, I think moving forward now, it's happened way too many times, so goalkeepers have to be so aware.
It did end up 3-2 to Portugal. The second goal scored by Joao Felix. Graeme Souness, not happy with Ghana goalkeeper Lawrence Atizigi. Raced out, sits down, he said, and there you go on and beat me. Now, I can kind of see where he was coming from with this, but again, the delivery of the analysis wasn't brilliant. And also, like we referenced last time, Mark Pugac, the presenter, concurred like a flipping fanboy puppy dog.
Yeah, and look, do you know what? Again, this is one of those situations where, in hindsight, had he stayed a bit deeper, yeah, it would have made it more difficult to beat him. Similarly, had he been a yard closer, it would have been the right decision, because he would have been close enough in order to close the space and spread effectively. He makes a save, and everyone's saying it's a great save. So, yeah, he's just mistimed the advance ever so slightly. And in the end, yeah, the distance he was from the player was slightly too big, and it did make it that little bit easier. So, look, in essence, I do agree, but it is just, it's another one of those situations. I'd love for them to go on a bit deeper and just said, look, similarly, if, you know, they did the whole thing where they, it's quite clever how they do it, where they can move the goalkeeper back into a position. Similarly, they could have done it the other way and just said, well, had he been here, then it's a great decision. Because how often do we see it when a player comes in on the angle? And it's, the thing is, you look at it on TV and you think, oh, he's way out of his goal. But actually, again, everyone listening into this, goalkeepers listening in, you know what it's like when they're on the angle and you come, it's only 10 yards he's come. It's not like he's 20 yards out of his goal. He's only come 10 yards. Had he come 11, then we're saying it's the right decision. So again, it's, you know, I know we're going to talk about Wayne Hennessy shortly as well, where it's one of these where it is such fine detail. A yard further forward and it seemed to be correct. 3 yards deeper, similarly, it seemed to be correct.
So that was Thursday. You just mentioned Wayne Hennessy there. On to Friday and Wales versus Iran. Quite the moment. Hennessy off, Danny Ward on. Talk us through this one.
Yeah, it's a split second. Like how close he was to making contact with the ball. I think we spoke of, who was it? Saudi Arabia goalkeeper, wasn't it? I think in the previous pod, and about how decision-making was spot on. I know we're going to reference a Serbia goalkeeper in a bit as well, where similarly he's come out in a sort of similar situation, just got his hand to the ball before the striker, and they're lauding the goalkeeper, which again, had he been a split second later, it would have been a penalty, and they'd have been saying the same thing they said about Hennessy. But it's one of them where it looks worse than it is as well, because the technique he's used to clear the ball is exactly what you'd use to clear the ball. And of course, his foot ends up so high and he catches a player. It does look a lot worse than it is. And there is zero intention there. So I feel for him here because you are, yeah, we're talking a split second, not even a second, you know, a millisecond or two. He gets there first. And we're talking about great goalkeeping, proactive goalkeeping.
Definitely a red card though, right? You are saying that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know they gave him a booking, didn't they, initially, and had a feeling when they went to VAR. Just because, again, although there was no intent, like, I do get it. The fact that when he's collided with a player, he is so high and he's caught him quite badly. So it's really, really unfortunate. But yeah, I can fully understand why Wales didn't challenge it.
Third goalkeeper to be sent off in a World Cup. This stat kind of did the rounds, but do you know the other two?
Go on.
Paluca of Italy in 94 and Kune of South Africa in 2010.
Well, there you go. I had no idea on either. So, yeah, you got me.
Horrid messages, by the way. And we shouldn't pay too much attention to these, of course, but I am going to flag them towards Danny Ward on social media. Just absolutely ridiculous about the fact that he'd only been on the pitch for X amount of minutes and conceded two goals, that in X amount of minutes he conceded more than X, Y, and Z. Just crazy. Can you just, I mean, outline the goals for us? There wasn't really too much he could have done better, right?
No chance. And this is where, do you know, one of the messages I send to the lads I work with, probably more than any other message I send, is there's only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. You know, that's the truth. You can have the best game of your life and lose 5-0, the worst game of your life and win 5-0. Like, you know, there is only so much of an impact you can have. And look, you come on in a game like that, down to 10 men, naturally you're going to be under the cosh. And of course, as soon as they get that first goal, which he had no chance with, then they're naturally going to be pushing for an equaliser. So there is always a high chance you're going to concede the second. So the fact that he's conceded two in a short space of time, to some extent, isn't surprising, I would argue, because as mentioned, you're down to 10 men, so there's a good chance you're going to concede one, and naturally it would have made no difference really to Wales whether they lose 1-0 or 2-0, so they had to push for that equaliser.
Joint seconds for clean sheets in the Premier League this season, by the way, Danny Ward. People seem to not acknowledge that fact when you consider the start that Leicester had to the campaign as well. You might say he's actually in pretty good form at the moment, but he was a goalkeeper that came on. Let's stay on that theme, because two other goalkeepers brought in for the second round of group games, Mounir Mohammadi of Morocco and Qatar's Meshal Basham. We'll start with Mounir first, who replaced Bono literally seconds before kickoff against Belgium. Now, according to the manager, Bono took a whack in the Croatia game. He felt unsteady. Mounir came in. He did a job, but it took nearly an entire half the commentary team to notice the change. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It's it's a fascinating situation, because it very, very rarely gets to that point, because he's done the national anthem and everything, hasn't he? Like, it was really bizarre. But then similarly, I guess it's that moment of honesty where, yeah, and again, all goalkeepers can appreciate this, where you kind of know, if you know you're not quite right, you've always got that battle with yourself. It's kind of like, well, I want to keep the shirt. Because, in fact, this is a great example that Mounir came in, and by the way, we'll talk about his performance in a minute, because I thought he was excellent. But you've always got that risk. Someone comes in, and of course now, realistically, he's keeping the shirt for the next game. Or there's certainly a very good chance that he will, because he's come in and done as well as he has. So naturally, you don't want to give up the shirt. But I think every now and then, and I can certainly relate from a personal example, JPT final, was due to play at Wembley, dislocated my shoulder, did everything I could to get back, trained 2 days before the game. I even did the shoulder 2 weeks prior. So it was, you know, shouldn't really have been fit for 6 weeks or so, but managed to get to a point after 2 weeks where I'm like, right, I'm playing this game. And trained a couple of times, went fine. Then it was literally 2 days before the game, and it wasn't even in training. It was going to get something out of my car, I remember, and I felt the sharpest pain in my shoulder. And you suddenly have that moment of realization where it's like, look, of course I want to do this. I want to play at Wembley. I want to play in the biggest games. But am I really going to do myself justice? And this isn't about me. This is about the team, et cetera, et cetera. So my gut says he's done the warm-up. If he's obviously not feeling right, he's gone in, he's doing the national, and it must have just hit him where it's like, do you know what? I just can't do this. This just isn't the right thing to do. And credit to him, because that's one of the toughest things to do, to go over and have that. And credit to the manager as well, because if you watch, he's so calm in that moment, makes a substitution, the goalkeeper comes on, and credit to Mounir, like, yeah, fantastic performance. You know, I thought some of the crosses he came for in particular, I thought he was very proactive, a couple of saves as well. Very, very good.
Yeah, Pablo Zabaleta as well. You mentioned this to me, very complimentary of Mounir, which was nice to hear, as was Jermaine Ginas of Thibaut Courtois, or perhaps not so much complimentary, but more so reasoned with his analysis again from Ginas. he understood basically why the first of the two similar goals scored by Morocco was conceded. That one being ruled out for offside, of course.
Yeah, well, look, both. I think both are really, really tough for Courtois. Now, I think he'll be a little bit frustrated with the second one because you can see that he's tried to get a hand to it and just misjudged it ever so slightly. But honestly, they are the toughest balls to deal with. Whipped in at the near like that. The opposition running across the front. It's a brilliant, brilliant free kick, both of them. So difficult for a goalkeeper. And yeah, certainly the first one, obviously given offside in the end, but there's nothing you can do really because you're expecting the header. The lad actually misses the header, doesn't he? But he's still classed as offside because, of course, he is very much interfering. But it's not then a shot from 20-odd yards. It is literally a reaction save from a yard. And he's expecting the header, so he's moving to his left. The moment the header doesn't come, it's then can he react quick enough to make the save, which he wasn't able to. And the second one's so similar. Men running across the front. And it's a horrible thing when you're diving back into your goal, which is the only thing he could do here, and you're having to try and get connection on the ball, which isn't a natural connection. You know, normally you would then look to parry sideways, but that's only going to parry it into your net. So you can see the effort from Courtois to almost volleyball, like knock it back out into play. But it's such a tough technique to do. Wasn't able to execute it. And of course, it ends up in the back of the net.
So he was interfering, like you said, for that first goal that wasn't given. But never in a million years is that offside to me. I know that it is in the law of poppycockery that we seem to exist in football now, but that is not offside. I cannot believe that that's given.
What, in terms of the actual moment the free kick's taken?
Where Saïss is compared to, I don't know who the defender was, Vertonghen maybe, but where Saïss is, he's not offside. The midriff is level. I think that's where it should be judged on now, your midriff. Because if you're moving, that point of movement, his legs are clearly well behind the left leg of the defender. So it's what, half his head and then part of his arm that's in front of the defender. That's complete madness because essentially he's timed his run or he's timed his movement bang on because he's looked at where he is. There is no way that he can think, oh, my head or my arm is in front. So I've said this many times before, it's just luck now. Moments like that in football are just down to luck. Strikers, attackers, just footballers who have trained for years in timing their run now just have to go, I'm going to do exactly what I've always done, but if my toe is offside, that's just sod's law. It's madness.
Yeah. Do you know what? I would have to agree. Yeah. I mean, I didn't pay too much attention to that in particular because I was just looking at the goalkeeper. But yeah, you do make a very good point.
Okay, we'll move on quite quickly, shall we, to the second of the goalkeepers that we referenced there, Meshal Bersham of Qatar. Now, the opening game against Ecuador, Saïd Al-Shaib was widely criticised and he was then replaced for that game against Senegal. And it's fair to say, Bersham, I don't know, a memorable performance, can we say?
I like how you described it to me when you sent over the footage. A colourful performance. do you know what? There was one moment in particular, and look, credit to him. He was very much trying to be effective. You know, he was certainly on the front foot. It didn't work out brilliantly for him on a few occasions. And there's one comment I hate in goalkeeping, which is the flaps at crosses. You know, that's one that it bugs me when, like, you'll hear people describe a goalkeeper, oh, he's a bit of a flapper. You're like, okay, yeah, whatever. But in this game, in fairness, there was the classic flap at cross. That was literally a flap. The ball's come in. He's not trying to punch it. He's not trying to catch it. He's trying to flap it away. That's probably the first time in my life I've seen a genuine flap.
Wow.
Yeah, which I hate to say because, well, you know me. I hate to say it, but it was, again, the techniques that he was using to keep goal certainly weren't textbook, let's just say.
Edouard Mendy, also widely criticised in Senegal's opening defeat to the Netherlands. He produced a couple of very decent saves in that game, didn't he? The best of which was the one off the knee of Ismaïl Mohamed. Quick reactions, great agility. Just palmed it wide. Brilliant save.
No, I'm really happy for Mendy because we mentioned the narrative potentially slightly changing, but this is it. You know, we talk about goalkeepers all the time. It's not necessarily when things go wrong. It's the ability to bounce back and bounce back as quickly as you can, not necessarily pay too much attention to what's been said prior. And yeah, certainly, you mentioned, made a couple of great saves. Great bit of distribution as well, where he came for a cross, very strong, lovely side volley, which actually involved Bersham, where he's come rushing out and it did create a bit of chaos. But no, the save to his right, you mentioned off the knee, just fantastic. You know, the footwork to get himself where he needed to be, managed to dive forward still, the reaction, the athleticism. There's a lovely shot where you're almost sideways on with him and you see the athleticism. There's not many goalkeepers in the world that can make this save. You know, speed of reactions, the power needed, the athleticism needed, and then the coordination in order to get enough on the ball to flip it around the post. Just a brilliant save.
I know I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but Jonathan Pearce felt the need to categorise that save as redemption for Mendy following what was a dodgy display in the opening game, at fault for both goals, said Pearce. He did the same randomly for Keylor Navas yesterday against Japan. I'm going to read out what he said because the camera was on Navas as he was just playing out from the back. More comfortable first half for Navas. Maybe culpable for a couple of the seven Spain scored. Certainly got two hands to the second goal scored by Asensio. Absolutely no reason for him to reference that whatsoever. It was just a boring half of football. So, I don't know, let's try and think of things to talk about.
Yeah, I'm struggling with him, I got to be honest. Do you know what it is? It's that, and I don't know, this is probably going to be a bit of a slight on British people, but where, I don't know, you might say something complimentary about something or someone, and then there's almost this need to then back it up with something a bit negative. And it seems like that with him, like he'll give a compliment, he'll give, and then he'll quickly take it away. You know, it's almost like he doesn't quite feel comfortable just leaving the compliment out there. And yeah, I've noticed that more and more. I guess he's always had that edge to him over the years as a commentator, but certainly in this World Cup, it's just those little comments, there's just little side comments that he'll just leave there. And like you say, maybe once or twice, the co-commentator might jump on it as well and agree and what have you. But it just, there isn't really any need for it.
Yeah, those poor robots on Robot Wars. He used to wax lyrical and then one error and he'd be digging right into them.
What a show that was.
Okay, so as a result of that, oh, I've been undecided, but we're going to do another one of these.
Commentary corner.
Commentary corner. Now, I guess the reason for this and my exasperation over the past few days is because we're having a lot of games. I mean, it's four games a day, right? So they're all clumped together. So I guess it's natural we're going to be hearing more of this as opposed to a few times a week. And like I've just said, I wasn't sure whether to put this in and whether this is even received well by the listeners, because part of me feels like, is this infinite? Is this commentary corner just going to be infinite and that punditry is never going to change? And at the same time, is us talking about it becoming a bit boring or same old, same old? I don't know. But still, we're going to talk about it because some of the stuff that was said over the past few days was complete madness. So actually, we'll start with a positive and we'll go with Guy Mowbray and Martin Keown, who flagged spot on, absolute brilliant, top draw, great goalkeeping by Serbia stopper Vanja Milinkovic-Savic in that defeat to Brazil.
Yes, indeed. And do you know what? Again, this was one of those moments that we've spoke about a few times where it was very good goalkeeping, because he's come down the side, he's coming in on the angle, touch was slightly too big, and he's made the decision, instant decision, to come, engage and dive at feet, and he got there first. It is another one of those moments. If he gets this ever so slightly wrong, in the same one that we spoke about Wayne Hennessy, this would end up being a penalty. So he has to be spot on with this, because the other decision would be to come out, close the space and then stand up and usher him wide. But he did make the decision to engage. And the fact that he nailed it, he does deserve the plaudits. And it's nice. And again, we say it so often on here, like, it's one of them where if the commentators are going to give you that love, like, absolutely take it. I mean, again, it could have been broken down slightly more, because this is, as a goalkeeper, it's one of those horrible moments when you know you're going in 50-50. You've got to be brave. You can certainly get injured in a situation like this. And it is that risk of a penalty. Because you imagine if he toes it past him and he brings him down, they're then talking about how stupid he is. And that could have happened, because it was literally a 50-50. But the fact that he executed it, he certainly deserves a praise.
And Iluko is next, who gave Wojciech Szczesny plenty of praise for his double save. One of those being from the penalty spot in Poland's win over Saudi Arabia. However, kind of doing so in what you'd call, what, layman's terms, I guess. So she said, this is world-class goalkeeping. This is what goalkeepers train for. He's right up there, uses his hands. Okay. She then watches the save. You know, he doesn't have to do much, really. He reads it the right way. But look at this. This is an incredible save. So she's up and down with this one, Eni. On one hand, she's saying it's an incredible save. She's also saying he uses his hands, but then she's saying he doesn't have to do much. So, you know, a bit of everything there.
A little bit of a mix. And again, it's just one of those situations you wish they'd have gone. Because, by the way, this is one of the best ever saves in a World Cup. Like, as a double save, as a you know, series, as a few seconds, in terms of the excitement, certainly as a goalkeeper, when you think of all the classic moments over the years in the World Cup, this is up there for me. And it's, look, had this have happened in a semi-final towards the end of the game, you know, this had been one of the moments you talk about for tens of years, you know, because it's everything about it. It's the build-up to the penalty. You can see that he psyched out the taker. You know, when they zoom in on the taker, you can see he looks nervous. So he's read him. The movement prior to the penalty in order to ensure he knows it's going to go where he wants it to go. Getting down, getting a good firm hand, getting a decent amount of distance away. The speed at which he then gets up, gets his body weight right. Because even that, the speed at which he gets up, if he's a split second slower, this ends up in the goal. But you can see how quickly he gets to his feet, gets his body weight right, sets, and then the reaction to get fingertips, and even the strength of his fingers in this moment, because even then, you look at it logically, he wasn't really able to get much of his finger on the ball to still be able to tense up the fingers in that split second to get it up and over the bar. Everything about this was world class. And it was one of them where you could tell it was good that he was getting the love. As you say, it was a bit mixed. They didn't really know how to break it down, describe it, explain what he was doing. But at the same time, they wanted to give him credit, but didn't know exactly what to give him credit for. So it was difficult to listen to, but no, certainly as a goalkeeper watching this, as I say, that will go down. Certainly for Polish fans, I bet this will be a moment they talk about for many, many years.
Yeah, absolutely. Emi Martinez was next with a lovely grasp from a free kick from Alexi Vega of Mexico. Now, this was one of those which grabs your attention when watching. It did mine. Anyway, you know, when you give it as it's happening, you're like, oof, decent. And then you rewind it to watch it again. Now, after he'd made the save, a good 30 seconds or so passed before Lee Dixon was egged on by Sam Matterface. He talked about goalkeepers who normally parry it in those areas. And Dixon, to be fair, said, quite like that. Pause. It was easy for him, I have to say. If there's any danger in it, they normally punch them away. He'll have a photograph of that for sure tonight.
I mean, this is what I mean. It's so, I'm going to go back to it. It's so British. That's what it is. It's so British. Because actually,
this it's insane. It's what
this
it is.
Yeah, this is phenomenal. Like, this is phenomenal. How many goalkeepers in the world hold that ball? Because, by the way, he's whipped it. Let's firstly make a point on the save. Like, he's made it look incredibly comfortable, yes. But you actually look at the free kick, it's whipped over the wall and it's going pretty much in the top corner. Like, the speed at which he's moved his feet, exploded to his right, got himself so up, so high to get two hands to it and then to hold it. And by the way, these balls, and I've heard this from a few different sources now, they put a coating on these balls and you probably see it. When they show a slow motion of a goalkeeper making a catch, it's very rarely completely clean because it's got this weird coating on the ball. So it's almost like spinning in the hand. So even that, the fact that the ball's that little bit slipperier, if that's the right word, slippier, close enough. Anyway, the fact that it's even more slippy than normal and that he's got two hands, been able to hold it, the athleticism, the power, just making it look so calm. And you imagine the impact that has on both your team and the opposition. The opposition see that and it's almost a bit of a, oh, okay. You know, your team see that. And again, it's going to give you a big boost to know that you've got someone like that behind you. So again, just another brilliant moment.
And the pièce de résistance in all of these was the goal conceded by Shuichi Gonda for Japan in their loss to Costa Rica. I mean, glory be. Let's right, what we're going to do on this one, I'm actually going to read this out. So it's going to take a little while, but bear with me. Okay, we're going to go to the studio panel with Joe Cole and Karin Carney. Actually, no, we're not. We're going to start with the commentary from Clive Tildesley and John Hartson as it's happened. So they're watching the replay. Gonda gets a hand, says Hartson. Not a strong hand. What a finish from Fuller. Have to say, that's a brilliant piece of skill. Tildesley, he's up too early though, isn't he? Hartson, yeah. How far is he off his line, Clive? He's so far off his line. Tildesley, it's an excellent effort by Fuller, but I think a World Cup class goalkeeper keeps that out. It's really straight at him, but he just seemed to be up in the air too soon. Okay, we then go into the studio after the game. Joe Cole, the goalkeeper Gonda, he's going to be Gonda in the morning. Chuckles, cued in the studio, because that is horrendous. He's had nothing to do, absolutely nothing. Karen highlighted it. He jumped too early, didn't he? Karen Carney, his feet, Like there, he's jumped. I don't know if he thought he was going to get lobbed even more so. Just goes too early and gets it all completely wrong. It's a poor bit of goalkeeping, but I still think it comes from Ishida. Okay, so she's actually putting the blame on the defence. We then go to the save from Keylor Navas in the same game, which is hugely amplified because of the circumstances and what has happened up the other end. Now, Hal Robson-Kanu is analysing that one, and then in comes Carney again. Hal, that's the difference between both goalkeepers. Had very little to do, but when one of those moments come, Navas steps up and Gonda doesn't. And again, you can have nothing the whole game, but you have to be focused and concentrated.
Right, where do we start? I mean, look, I think we need to have another franchise. I was thinking about this. Goalkeeping cliches. Like when we hear one of these goalkeeping cliches, because, I mean, they've dropped in about seven there. You know, the classic, that's what makes a good goalkeeper, those big moments. Look, for me, I've watched this a few times. The bit that no one really picks up on, and again, the camera, you just can't quite see if it is deflected or not. And the reason I mention that is that, look, his movement is a little bit unusual. Let's break down a couple of bits. Is he too far off his line? I mean, maybe half a yard. Like, not really. You know, talking about how far out he is of his goal. Well, not really. He's about 4 yards, which is ordinary. Some might go three, some might go two. But to be four, it's not like he's 7 yards, you know, for a shot on the edge. So, no, I'm not overly fussed about that. Maybe he could have been half a yard deeper. Even if he was half a yard deeper, it doesn't necessarily make this any easier because it effectively turns into a chip. You know, if it's a chip over him and it goes right in the top corner, we're saying it's a great finish. But because of his positioning, the ball is quite high at the point it reaches him. Now, added to that, if this ball does take a deflection, which I think it does, that messes up his footwork because he's going for the initial ball. If it takes that slight nick, which is why I'm absolutely convinced it does, then all of a sudden you're having to do an extra movement to try and get to the ball. And if you watch his movement, he doesn't get a step in. And I think that's because of a deflection. That's my guess. Now, look, if it doesn't get deflected, then my constructive feedback would be that, yeah, you get a step in, you explode, he'll be able to get two hands to it and be able to get it away from danger. But if it's taken a deflection, I understand exactly why he hasn't made that movement because he'll be going for the original ball. And by that point, the moment it's taken it, he can't readjust. Because you actually look at the flight, it's because it's such an unusual flight as well. It's quite slow, quite loopy, a lot of spin on it. That's why I'm convinced it does. And if it does, it's not much of an error, if any error, but it does look bad because, of course, it is going so slow and he gets his fingertips to it. But that's the other part to this as well, is that when the ball's going that slow and you can only get fingertips to it, you can't generate enough power to get it away from danger. So I feel for him on this one because it doesn't look good at all and he's got absolutely hammered by everybody for it. But I'd love to know, and I did have a little search earlier, but I couldn't find any articles to explain whether, you know, he's given his thoughts on it. Because I'm sure if we could ask him directly, if it's taken a nick, then actually I think a lot of the criticism isn't justified.
I hadn't actually factored that in, a deflection. I hadn't seen that, to be fair. What I thought about the goal was, and this is going to, I don't know how this will sound, but you know when you're a kid and the ball is too big for your feet. So often when you were playing junior football, so many great goals or what were perceived as great goals were scored because either the goalkeepers were too small or the player put so much into, you know, his tiny feet going into a massive size 5 at 6 years old that the ball would float over the goalkeeper because he was just able to hit it really hard. Now, in this instance, it felt a little bit like that. Yes, a good strike from Fuller, but almost a strike that the goalkeeper perhaps didn't expect him to execute.
Well, do you know what? And it's just probably changing the subject slightly, but I think, look, he's, in terms of physical stature, he's not the biggest goalkeeper from what I can see. Now, I say that and it can be quite deceiving sometimes when you're watching on TV and actually the players are a lot bigger than you think they are. But goalkeepers tend to, and this is a real general rule of thumb and doesn't necessarily apply across the board, but ordinarily, if you're not 6'5", 6'6", you might play a bit deeper. Hugo Lloris is a great example of this. You know, he's certainly not a giant, Hugo Lloris, probably 6'1", I'd guess. And he does play that bit deeper. And there's a reason for that, because his reactions are fantastic. And a situation like this, he might be 2 yards. And actually, if he is, certainly with his power, speed, you know, of course, he's getting to the ball. Whereas bigger goalkeepers, often you find play a little bit further forward because, again, their physical size, that would then make a situation like this also reasonably comfortable. Whereas that is a point you could make that, you know, to him, and it's such a small detail, but rather than being 4 yards off your line in a situation like that, given the type of goalkeeper you are, maybe you play three, maybe you play two. But again, it's a tiny, tiny detail, but no one would necessarily bring this up. This again goes back to, and I realise that our pods are turning into more and more commentary corner, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because I guess like anything, a big thing we want for this podcast. And if this is our lasting legacy, whenever GKU finally does end, if it ever ends, I can imagine us at 95 years old still having these conversations. But I'd love that. You know, at some point, I know we say it over and over and over and over, but someone with just a little bit more insight to actually give a different argument, because, yeah, it's easy for them all to sit on the panel and, yeah, make their jokes and, you know, just build momentum with the criticism and try and find more things to criticize, but not for 1 minute actually putting themselves in the goalkeeper's shoes, because they can't, because they're not able to. They've never played the position, so they can't see what the goalkeeper can see and actually give an explanation why he's done what he's done, because he's not done what he's done because he's stupid or he's not of a level. He's obviously a decent keeper, so there's a reason he's done what he's done. So for someone to actually just be able to take their stance and be like, all right guys, fine, I get your point, but how about this? And at least then it might challenge a few of the stupid things that are said so often.
Okay, five more goalkeepers to reference here to wrap up the World Cup action for now. This second round of group games, Milan Borjan of Canada, really good save at 2-1 down, double save at 3-1 down too. The opening goal as well started with his ball out from the back under pressure on his wrong foot too.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that double save because again, it's another interesting one. We did get a lot of credit for this and rightly so. Good double save, certainly. But the first one, again, if you're going to be, in fact, both saves, if you're going to be giving analysis and giving precise analysis, he's off balance for both saves. So the first one, look, had the player have actually put it in the near post, he's moving to his left and he saves it with his right foot. So to an extent, you could argue that that worked in his favour, because that could have gone very differently. And even the second one, he's not been able to get himself quite in the right shape, but thankfully the ball was close enough and he was able to manipulate his body in such a way to make the save. So yeah, look, two good saves, good credit where credit's due. Again, was it textbook? If you were a coach, you'd probably look at it and ask him to change a couple of bits in that. But no, look, I thought he had a couple of key moments. The save to his right, I thought was excellent. You know, got himself in a really good position, very sharp, good angle that he's able to parry the ball. No, very, very good. And as you say, great bit of distribution to help set up the goal.
Manuel Neuer and Unai Simon both with a series of excellent saves in the draw between Germany and Spain last night. Neuer's from Olmo, the pick of the bunch from him, and Simon from Musiala, the pick of his.
Yeah, well, Simon, and actually this then references the goal. We spoke earlier about Ziggy from Ghana coming far down the line and obviously getting a bit of criticism for not quite getting close enough. This is the example of a goalkeeper that then is pretty much identical, you know, and he actually just held his position. And it's so tempting for a goalkeeper. The closer they're coming in, at some point you just want to go and engage. But credit to him, he just stood up and said, look, if you're going to score, it's going to have to be a good finish. I'm not going to come and allow you to slide this past me. And I thought he stood up well. Reactions were very good. Now, I thought this was a top save. And the Neuer one, I mean, I've watched this several times. Look, it's a great save. It is a great save. It's an unusual save. It's an awkward save. The ball's moving. It's moving at pace. Look, if this goes in, he's getting stick. That's the truth of it, because it would have looked, had he got the parry and it had gone in the top corner, the fact that it wasn't that far away from him, I just wondered whether it was the right technique to go with the top hand in this situation. But at the same time, I think when you see the ball from behind when it's struck, it is moving and it's moving all over the place. I don't think he quite picks it up in the way that he wants to. And it's moving so quickly, it has to be such a quick reaction. So look, I don't want to take anything away from the save, because I think it is, this beats a lot of goalkeepers, just the fact that it's moving all over the place. So in the end, he does enough to get it onto the crossbar. But certainly when you're watching it, it's not the most aesthetically pleasing save, but at the same time, very, very effective.
Neuer is Neuer. We love Neuer, of course. But watching that yesterday again, and Neuer will play the way that Neuer plays. That just is what it is. But because of the narrative, I guess, surrounding Manuel Neuer and the fact that he was one of the original sweeper keepers of this new wave of sweeper keepers, he's so casual when playing out from the back, like unbelievably casual. And actually, when you watch it, he gives the ball away quite a lot. But it's never referenced because I guess it's Manuel Neuer and you don't really look at it that way. But there were a couple of moments yesterday where I thought, he's so casual with the ball and it doesn't faze him at all. There was one moment, I think, where he just chipped it out to the right back and it just went off. Mm. I thought, that's actually not the best ball that you should have played in that moment, but it just carries on. No one says anything.
No, do you know what I thought? That I'd love to see the stats. Because, you know, we talk about goalkeepers that are great at playing out. And certainly, like you say, he's certainly one of the originals. And credit to him because of his age. Not that he's stupidly old, but, you know, we spoke a lot about the new generation of goalkeepers coming through that are incredible with their feet. And so credit to him because he came up in a generation where it was still quite new and he's picked it up so quickly and he's done it to the level he's done it. But it's interesting to me in that obviously, when Manuel Neuer does it, it's Manuel Neuer. So no one really questions it. Whereas imagine that was a young goalkeeper coming through doing that in an under-23s game. I can promise you the goalkeeper coach is pulling him afterwards saying, like, come on, there needs to be a bit more attention to detail here. Look a bit sharper. The word that would get used would be sloppy. Like, it just looks so sloppy when, you know, the touch isn't great, the pass out isn't great, the chip isn't great. And it's just a bit like, come on, like a little bit more attention to detail. But it's Manuel Neuer. So it's one that naturally that will get brushed over very quickly. And again, I guess we're guilty of it as well in that, yeah, look, he's one of my favourite goalkeepers of all time. So it's one of them where you don't necessarily want to criticise because, my God, what he's achieved in the game is just unbelievable. And he's still continuing to perform at such a high level. But when you are breaking down individual moments, that in particular, you would look at, and if it wasn't Manuel Neuer, you would be looking and saying, like, look, he's got to be a little bit more precise and show a little bit more detail in what he's doing.
He has tied the record, we should say, for the most appearances by a goalkeeper at World Cups now. He's on 18 with two others. Can you, Richard Lee, can you name them?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Let me think. Is one of them English?
No. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the countries. I'll give you the countries.
Go on then.
One is a fellow countryman and the other is a Brazilian.
Oliver Kahn?
No.
Really?
Not actually.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought I'd nailed that one. And the other one's a Brazilian. Taffarel.
Correct on Taffarel, yes.
Oh, let me have one more guess. Fellow countryman. Oh, this is going to annoy me, isn't it? Go on, give me the answer.
Sepp Maier.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, close. I'll give you that. One from two. Very well done.
Thank you. I mean, 50%. I'll take it.
Speaking of Brazilians, Alisson got the nod ahead of Edison with a wonderfully groomed moustache. At the same time, he has come out and spoken about that, hasn't he? It was for Blue November, I think it was. So prostate cancer, taking care of the moustache to just raise awareness for health in men. But yes, he got the nod. Who would you have gone with? Who would you go for as Brazil's number one? One of the hardest debates, I think, ever in goalkeeping.
The thing is, yeah, no, it's really tough. It's really tough. And look, I've got to stick to my guns here because I am such a big Edison fan. So, you know, and I do think he's, for me at the moment, he's the best in the world. I genuinely think that. And I know it's difficult because he plays in a team that really suits him at Man City. So, of course, if he was in a different team, maybe I might see that slightly differently. But I would personally go with Edison. That being said, look, Alisson, it's so close between them. And the fact that Alisson has always really had the nod over him. So it didn't surprise me to see that he would get the nod over Edison. But you must feel, if you are Edison and you're looking, it like intrigues me when you're looking at all these goalkeepers playing, and there's a lot of goalkeepers that maybe aren't the number one at their parent club, for Matt Turner being a good example, where you're seeing goalkeepers playing for all these different countries, and Edison is arguably, you know, not just in my opinion, but I think most people's would have him top three in the world, top five in the world, and yet that's not good enough to get into your national team. That must be quite frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one more just before we complete this World Cup action. Matty Ryan, I don't know whether you saw this, but Australia boss Graham Arnold was screaming at Ryan to celebrate the goal against Tunisia. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before.
No, and I found it kind of odd because it's, I don't know, like you must go and celebrate. It felt like that, like you must go and celebrate with the team. Like, well, I don't know. Like, again, we talk about a lot about what we want from a goalkeeper. You know, a lot of the time, if you were to describe, I think most people would describe the goalkeeper that they want, it's cool, calm, collected, et cetera, et cetera. So my guess, if I'm Matty Ryan in that moment, yes, we've just scored a goal, but all I'm thinking about is then the next minute. Like, don't get me wrong, when, you know, I played in teams and we scored, you have a moment where it's that, you know, you've sort of punched the air and yes, come on, get in. And then instantly you're like, right, tune in, get everyone back. Let's make sure now, because the next couple of minutes you're vulnerable, you know. And imagine if he is going up and celebrating every time they score a goal. Like, that's just not, for me, that I wouldn't want that from my goal. Of course, sometimes you score that last minute winner. I've done it myself where you sprint the length of the pitch and you celebrate when you kind of feel like you've got the job done. But if anything, I quite like the fact that he's so calm in that moment, knowing that there is still more time to play. So I just found it very, very strange. I'd have been curious to know what the conversation was after the game, because I've got no doubt they'd have had a word after the game.
Yeah, I mean, there are suggestions that maybe it was to do with time wasting and running down the clock. I don't know. But I just love the fact that Arnold was so red-faced. Matty Ryan walks over and it's a bit like, you're right, Gaffer. And then, well, I think when he realises what he wants, he's like, all right, calm down, Gaffer. I'm gonna go back now.
Yeah. It was almost like he just ignored him. He was like, who is this crazy guy? But that's it. And I wouldn't want, I don't know, it's almost a bit weird then at that point if he's like, all right, could you imagine if he'd actually just gone and joined in at that point? It would have been like, I don't know, just really, really strange to me. Like, I would have been, I think as a goalkeeper, I would have been afterwards, I'd have gone and seen the manager and been like, look, this is my reason. It's not because I'm not happy that we've scored. Of course I am. But actually, I've got a job to do. Imagine I go and celebrate. I'm all excited. They come down and score 30 seconds later. We all look like idiots, you know? So look, let's celebrate at the end of the game, not the moment we've just scored a goal.
Right, Richard, that is us pretty much done. I am going to give you a stat of sorts. So throughout the next few episodes that we do, I'm going to try and create or think of or research a particular stat that hasn't been read out or researched already. Not that it's anything exciting, but, you know, a bit of fun for the podcast, as we do, as I like to do, really.
Yeah, not for the listener, but yeah, go.
Indulge me. Indulge me, if you will. So, Richard, of the 99 goalkeepers at this tournament, World Cup Qatar 2022, how many play in the country that they represent?
Oh, that's quite a good one, actually.
Thank you.
That is quite a good one because, so now I'm just having to think, because even the bigger nations, I mean, the only ones I can think of off the top of my head, you've got Pickford, you've got Neuer, you've got, it's going to be minimal. And 99, why are you laughing? Have I just named the two?
No, it's not just two, is it? I mean, for crying out loud. The only things, if they're the goalkeepers, I can think of Pickford, Neuer, I'm out.
Well, let's stick there. It's one of them. Well, I'm going to hedge right. I'm going to go with two. Someone else got three? No, look, I think
of the,
that...
Of the 99 goalkeepers, bear that in mind.
Of course, 99 goalkeepers. So actually, even the twos and threes, you're counting towards this. So
yes.
England, for instance, all three are playing in England. Right, mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right, well, let's go with 35.
Okay, not a bad stab, not a bad guess. You need to add on an entire starting 11 to that 35. It's 46 goalkeepers.
Mm.
So nearly, well, just over half, of course. So that is just over half, isn't it? Yeah.
No, it's less than half. Less than half. Terrible math.
Oh, it is. It's less than half.
Unbelievable. Are you going to cut that out or are you going to leave it in the pod?
No, that will stay in, mate. Don't you worry about that. Nothing
excellent.
Gets cut, of course, in this podcast. Okay, so I can do the research. I can't do the math. Okay, I'll give that to you. So yes, just under half of the goalkeepers at this tournament play in the country they represent. There are, of course, it's 99 goalkeepers because it should be 96 technically, but there are three teams who have four goalkeepers in their squad, which is something new. So that's Iran, Tunisia and Switzerland, which I thought was interesting. Four goalkeepers in their squad. And of the 32 teams at the tournament, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So seven teams who don't have a single goalkeeper that play in the country that they are representing. That's Poland, Switzerland, Senegal, Denmark, Wales, Cameroon and Serbia.
Well, there you go. Do you know, actually, that was quite interesting.
Okay, I'll take that one. Thank you. And lastly, it was also FA Cup second round weekend too. So we'll just quickly flag Nathan Ashmore of Boreham Wood, a clean sheet and a win over Bristol Rovers. Ross Fitzsimmons of Chesterfield, also a clean sheet and a win over AFC Wimbledon. And two save of the round contenders we are going to give to Jack Turner of Farnborough. That was in a 4-1 defeat to Wrexham. And Will Henry of Chippenham. That was in a 6-1 defeat to Burton.
Yeah, I'll mention Jack Turner because it was a brilliant, brilliant double save.
Unbelievable.
The second one in particular, the way he comes flying across, so brave. And it's absolutely hammered. And he's just timed it perfectly. Left hand, gets it away from danger. Very good. And very good save from Will Henry, as you mentioned. Full stretch to his right. Cross comes in, decides to stay on his line, give himself reaction time, explodes to his right. Very, very good. Of course, he was previously with Swindon. I remember he was with England youth team and stuff as well. Very highly rated. So no, pleased that he's still performing at a very good level.
Good stuff. Okay, in a bid not to overpromise and underdeliver again, although we have delivered on this occasion, the next podcast I'm aiming for, I think, is Saturday morning. So that will be the morning after the final round of group games. Of course, in this one and the one previously, we've done it as the last of the second or that particular round of group games is being played. But this time, because of the excitement that hopefully will build, we'll do it after the final round of group games. So the plan is Saturday, 3rd of December, but we'll see how we go, shall we?
Excellent. I mean, I had no plans for this weekend, so yeah, perfect.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, as always, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away. Oh,